It's Friday!
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 28th day of August 2020. By the time we get together again on Monday, we'll be doing so to say goodbye to the month of August, say goodbye to the last full month of summer 2020, and start thinking about, the end of warmth and light. Oh, autumn and winter just bum me the hell out. Sorry, Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine here. Yeah. We're not done yet. And so far, so good. Fingers crossed. Not a whole lot of crapulacity in the weather forecast for the evening, so I'm not worried about the rickety, coal-fried, antiquated, held together with baling wire, spit and toilet paper, Appalachian power grid. Tomorrow is a different story, however. Tomorrow we expect the remnants of Laura to come calling with a little bit of breeziness and a shit ton of rain. That's a complicated meteorological term, shit ton of rain. But again, it's not today. And let's see, program note. Berg started a new job. He's training now. I may have to go get him. If I do, before the end of the program, I'll ask Agnes to just sit in here and monitor the conversation while y'all continue the Friday on the Front Porch discussion until I can drive over and drive back. Ugh. Yeah. But, yeah, he's trying. He's trying. Okay, I'm the only... I'm just persnickety about summer and warm weather. Randy in PA says, I've been sweltering this whole summer. Very unproductive. I can't wait for fall. I understand some people being that way, but the diminution of the light, I know it's going to throw me into a funk, and not being able to play out in the yard is going to be even worse. So, for me, it's tough. But anyway, it's Friday. That means Friday on the front porch. That means we gather together around the extraordinary, ordinary round table in the old holler tree we sublet from the Keebler Elves. And cuss and discuss the issues of the week and whatever is on folks' minds. If you'd like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, there's a banner at the top of headon.live. Click that, and it'll carry you right over the river and through the woods and seat you around the extraordinary, ordinary round table. And, you can also augment your listening experience, as you know. We talk about this at the beginning of every program. Jumping into the chat room. It's at headon.live, too. And early arrivers Roger and Anatole and Squeaky are already there. Capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. He's a third stage guild navigator, but doesn't matter. He does not fold space in months with R's in them, or months without R's in them. We'll see if by the time September gets rolling, whether Sparky's in a space-folding mood again. Yeah, me too, says Darlene. Fall can go pound shit as far as I'm concerned. I'm fit to be dead. Oh, just let me hear the words, pumpkin spice. It's not easy being as cantankerous as I am. Don't try this at home. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, 9x9x9. Much obliged. Thank you very kindly to Jeremy in Vermont. His challenge last night was met. And thanks to Christopher and Queen for meeting that challenge. The fundraising goal was 435. That takes us down to 335. And that's 335 to finish tonight and $100 a Monday. So thank you very kindly to Dave for knocking out half a Monday. Much, much appreciated indeed. And thanks to our subscribers for the 28th day of the month. Thank you very kindly, our PayPal subscribers. That means thanks going out to to Joy in Ann Arbor, kicking in $21 to celebrate the birthday of her beloved son, who's turning 21 years old, and he's a wonderfully talented drummer, and has participated in drum corps. And drum corps has age limitations. And so her son is watching himself age out of drum corps without even being able to march a step for the last year. And as Joy noted in a message earlier, she said, he's turning 21 tomorrow. And I got to say, he's managing to wait out the Trump pandemic, the Don-demic, with a grace that exceeds the cost he's paying. So much damage wrought by the swamp ape, whose wife's eyes are pulled tighter than a Baptist sphincter. Did you notice that last night? Yes, as a matter of fact, I did. She's had so much work that when she raises her eyebrows, her pantyhose comes up. The surgeon was a newbie, vengeful or overwrought. So much plastic on that balcony, can they even decompose when they die? I'm asking for a worm. Mommy, why are these people so chewy? Thank you, Joy. And thanks as well to Sharon, to Charlene in Rogues Island, to Suman. Thank you to Randy in PA. Thank you to Michelle. Thank you all very kindly. So, that puts us at the end of the month, and if we do the 335 this evening, that means we will be able to have a fundraising free more in Monday after this weekend has passed. So, beginnings. And we'll go to the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable here in about 50 minutes or so. I had a note from Brother Deacon Asa that it's a sad day, not really, for the Trump mob. The Trump International Hotel in Vancouver, Canada, has filed for bankruptcy. It took all of 3 years to corkscrew the Trump International Hotel Vancouver into the dirt. Now, Nitwit Nero doesn't own this hotel. They just license his filthy name. And so today, the CEO of the hotel's parent company said he didn't know if it would ever reopen as a Trump property. Fine by me. One less thing named Trump in the world. Right. course, you know, who wants to deal with the bed bugs and the lice and the vermin that you get when you set foot in a Trump property? Ugh. And their Instagram presence or Twitter, their social media presence has disappeared, probably because of the number of people celebrating at their expense. Goodbye, Trump Hotel, Vancouver. And there's a little bit of good news. Apparently, the felony warrant has been dropped against Jacob Blake. Thank you, Ralphs, for letting me know. His lawyer told WISN 12 News Terry Sater, the felony warrant has been vacated, handcuffs have been removed in his hospital bed, and the deputies have left his room at Froedtert Hospital in Wauwatosa. What an obscenity in the first place. Meanwhile, previously, there have been two deputies in his hospital room at all times. You know, because the guy who was shot up by a cop and is paralyzed was going to, what, roll out of bed and crawl away? No sense of decency whatsoever on the part of these police. Tamir Rice, at age 12, was shot inside of a minute for having a toy gun and killed. A 17-year-old guy, a kid with a real gun who had just murdered two people and maimed another, sashayed away from the scene of his crime, and the cops wouldn't even get out of the car. And he went home and got a nice night's sleep. Kyle Rittenhouse is going to spend another 30 days in a juvenile detention facility in Illinois. His extradition hearing was today. He did not waive extradition. Instead, asking for it to be continued to a date certain. His pettifogging lawyer announcing that this was as clear-cut a case of self-defense as any he had ever seen. No, really. Starts shooting first, and somehow that constitutes self-defense. Jesus. I wouldn't be surprised at all to see the lawyer march into court and say, well, Your Honor, he's been in juvenile detention for over 30 days now. Hasn't he been punished enough? Would you be surprised? Not I. And this is a grim anniversary. The 28th day of August. It was 65 years ago today that a young boy by the name of Emmett Till was lynched in Mississippi by a bunch of Klansmen. And it remains one of the greatest injustices in American history. So badly beaten that his mama insisted on an open casket funeral, so, as she said, that you, so people can see what they did to my boy. Roy Bryant and J.W. Milam were charged with the kidnap, torture, and murder of Emmett Till. They were charged. They were tried. It really didn't put them out much, though. I mean, it was the outcome of the trial was a foregone conclusion from the prosecution to the defense, to the judge, to the all-white male jury. The jury gave him a pass sent them walking. And they even gave an interview to Look magazine after the acquittal and said, "Well, we had to kill him because he had looked upon the beauty of my Christian family values wife." The wife in question was Carolyn Bryant. She testified in the murder trial of her husband. She it was who told them that he had either whistled at or stared lasciviously or made a suggestive comment to her. She yet remains alive, and she has never been prosecuted for the lies that she told in court. It was a few years back that Timothy Tyson, an author and researcher, interviewed her, and she said she made up some of those claims out of whole cloth. Emmett Till would be 80 years old right now. He and John Lewis were born in the same year. And both of them had to endure beatings, but one of them did not survive the beatings. He was 14, not 15, my bad. Emmett Till had grown up in Chicago, but he was visiting family in Mississippi. Carolyn Bryant said that he grabbed her and made lewd remarks. She claimed he wolf whistled at her, but Emmett Till had a lisp. All of this happened about, the 26th of August, and on the 28th, 1955, J.W. Milam and Roy Bryant went to the home of Emmett Till's great-uncle and kidnapped him. His auntie offered the evil men money if they would just leave the boy alone. They marched him out of the home into a truck that was parked outside. A woman was in the truck. When they got him outside, they said, "Is this the right boy?" And the woman's voice said, "Yes." They pistol whipped him in a tool shed for a while. Then they made him carry, much as Christ was made to carry the beam of his own cross, they made him carry a 75-pound cotton gin fan to the Tallahatchie River, made him strip off his clothes, beat him continuously, gouged out an eye, then shot him in the head, wrapped his body up, tied to the cotton gin fan with barbed wire, and threw him in the water. And down in Mozuppi, the authorities tried to bury him right quick-like. And that's when his mama stepped in, Mamie Bradley, and she made them ship the body back home to Chicago and called on magazines like Jet and Ebony to come and photograph it so that the world might see the brutality of white supremacy on display in Mississippi and all over the Deep South. And that lit up the civil rights movement of that day, much as the civil rights movement has been reinvigorated by the slaughters of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, most particularly George Floyd. And now, as he lays in a hospital bed, unable to move from the waist down because of 7 bullets from a rogue cop, or maybe just an ordinary mainstream cop, when you get right down to it. Yeah. Later on, Carolyn Bryant Donham said she felt a tender sorrow toward Emmett Till's mama. Carolyn Bryant Donham even went so far as to write a book so maybe she could make a little money. A little money off the slaughter of Emmett Till. She doesn't seem to be... Well, I take that back. She's not going to make any money. Her memoir is not going to be available to scholars until 2038 by her terms. I regret the error. More Than a Wolf Whistle, the story of Carolyn Bryant Donham. Everyone knew she was lying. She knew she was lying. And even after she admitted she was lying, no one has seen fit to prosecute her. What a hell of an anniversary. Well, it must be eating away at the liver of Corona Caligula. His RNC got half the numbers, ratings-wise, of the Democratic National Convention. And more people tuned in to hear what Joe Biden had to say than tuned in to hear his mad rambling. Because it doesn't even bear description. What would you even call it? Catalog of fear and anger, petty jealousies, vindictiveness. And out of it comes realization, and we talked about this some, that thing that happened at the White House last night, in addition to being illegal as all hell, well, it was a super spreader event, too. One photograph I've seen of the not socially distant, rapturous attendees. Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. 5 if you count the woman wearing hers as a chin strap. 5 masks out of what is surely 100 people. There were 1,500 people there, next to no masks at all. Sitting next to each other and breathing on everybody. That happening as authorities in Charlotte, Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, have verified at least 4 cases of COVID-19 coming out of the in-person portion of the convention there. And it appears that one senior White House... Look, this is just the strategy. These fuckers have given up. That's too generous. They can't have given up because they never really made any attempt to begin with. But CNN's Jim Acosta reported We not only heard a lot of gaslighting tonight, we possibly saw and witnessed some super spreading from this event. With an official at the White House saying, everybody's going to catch this thing eventually. We have passed 6 million infections. We have passed 180,000 dead. And Donald J. Trump could not care less. Dr. Sanjay Gupta at CNN is approaching something I think that may fairly be described as disgust. The history books, he said, will be written about this chapter in our lives. It will show events like that in the middle of a pandemic at a time when the country decided to shut down, when there were 5,000, roughly, people infected, and at a time when more than 5 million infected, we started having events like that. It's really frustrating. It's mind-boggling. It shows there's still certain segments of the population who've still not learned and are not paying attention to what this virus is. The virus is a constant. It is still a very contagious virus. It's still very much circulating. Yeah, we're all going to get this thing sooner or later. And if you are relying solely on the Republican National Convention for your information, you wouldn't even know that the Rona is a thing. It was barely mentioned. Now, Melanoma made mention of it, saying, I have tremendous sympathy for the people who have got the virus because of my husband. No, she didn't say it that way. But that's ultimately how it worked out. Over at Now This, I'm sure you've seen their videos, Versha Sharma is the senior correspondent and managing editor. Versha Sharma tweeted, I'm floored. We triple-checked transcripts. We rewatched footage. This is COVID denial on another level entirely. The RNC ended without a single mention of how many Americans died from coronavirus. And Dr. Pritesh Gandhi said, I just turned on the TV to see an opera singer, fireworks, and thousands of unmasked Americans on the White House lawn. Earlier today, I spoke with a patient still on oxygen 11 weeks after a COVID diagnosis and then another that needs an MRI and can't afford it. Two Americas. They are homicidal maniacs, the maggots are. That's why I end the program every evening the way I do. If you see them, avoid them. Because, in fact, they are the plague. Plain and simple. Yeah, no kidding. Sparky saying, you needed industrial strength eye bleach for what they did last night. Well, but honestly, is it any surprise considering things like Sturgis? Because it doesn't strike me as very surprising. And we're finding out via the Daily Beast, interviewing a pair of Homeland Security officials, that all this time since, say, you know, March, there's been an unofficial, official, unwritten policy in the administration that one does not say the words domestic terrorism or white supremacy in the presence of Julius Geezer, because anytime he hears those words, he thinks people are talking about him, and he thinks it's a criticism of him. Elizabeth Newman was Assistant Secretary at the Department of Homeland Security for Counterterrorism and Threat Prevention. Miles Taylor, whom we've heard of before, is the former Chief of Staff at DHS. Speaking to the Daily Beast, Ms. Newman said, following the El Paso mass shooting last year, the White House was looking to find a way to show that they were handling the situation. I was advised by senior officials in the White House at the time that I should couch this in terms of countering violence rather than countering domestic terrorism or white supremacy when discussing it at the White House or in front of the president. The subtext was clear that by using those words, we would be distracting the president from the core issue. He can't hear the words because the words are him. Oh, and here we have a brand new, fresh Falwell update. The rain, as it were, has begun to fall in, and fall well. Ah, see what I did there? In Lynchburg. With a student coming forward, a former student at FU, Liberty University, who says that Becky leapt into bed with him and gave him head while he was visiting with the Falwells, staying at their humble abode after he'd been to band practice with her son. And said that, oh yeah, Becky, let me smash. Becky was the aggressor. Well, I guess so. Considering the fact that she was willing to play out that Cucky Jerry scenario with Giancarlo Granda, let him watch. Politico reporting the student was 22 at the time of the encounter. Near the start of Liberty's fall semester. He said she initiated the act and he went along with it. But despite his rejection of further advances, he said, Falwell continued pursuing him, offering him gifts and engaging in banter through Facebook messages. The messages, screenshots of which were provided by the former student to Politico, suggest a flirtatious relationship that went beyond what might be expected of a mother communicating with her son's bandmate. One referenced a mutual friend who said that she wants you to cut your bangs when you get your hair cut. I think you're beautiful just like you are, she told him. You don't want to cover up those killer eyes of yours, and you know the bandana drives me wild. Oy. Probably sitting around watching old Van Halen videos, Becky is, back in the days when Diamond David Lee Roth could move without assistance and wore that bandana around his neck. You know the bandana drives me wild. So it wasn't just the pool boy. No word as to whether Jer Jr. watched that incident. You know, they got security cameras all over the mansion, I'm sure. Oh, these Republican family values. Yes, yes, of course. And it's impossible to describe, speaking of family values, not impossible to describe, but difficult to describe on a radio program, but there was a moment last night, precious Princess Iwanka Madaddy Trump Kushner introduced her pappy, and in the course of walking by Melanoma just smiled that Carol Merrill standing by the box on the floor, door number three, smiled at her, and the minute Iwanka was out of at her back to her, she gave her a kid. My God, if looks could kill, precious Princess Iwanka Madaddy Trump Kushner would have gone away in a basket, in pieces. Jesus. But there was no small amount of schadenfreude that was attached to that. Rudy Giuliani was sitting in the front row at the speech last night, just grinning like a fox eating shit out of a wire brush. This did not go over well with Joe Scarborough, who, one should note, of course, was instrumental in the election, or sort of election, of Donald J. Trump, giving probably upwards of $1 billion worth of free publicity to him anytime that he wanted it. Oh, there were fireworks. Goodness me. And of course, the other takeaway from that 4 days of misery and lying and obfuscation and obscenity, you'd think that fully half of the Republican Party was comprised of people of color. They found every lickspittle African American they could find or lay hands on in the entire new 90 states of Merca, the greatest country in the history of the world, on earth forever in the universe under God. Oh, thanks, Ralps. Ralps sent along the story about Jacob Blake being unhandcuffed. Jude said, do thank Ralps for updating us on Jacob Blake's warrant status, as it's been troubling. May Jacob be able to obtain a level now of restfulness even in the midst of the horror in which he lives. Indeed, Jude. Indeed. Down South Carolina way, an update coming from David. Subject line, South Carolina schools. Candace quit her teaching job today because they refused to follow CDC guidelines. Masks were optional. Very little distancing. When she walked up on two teachers, mind you, calling the virus a hoax, she made her decision. She said that school administration sounded like Donald Trump, saying that it was just like the flu and that it didn't harm young people. Today, she got a teaching job in D.C., full benefits, three times the South Carolina salary, plus a $4,000 bonus. She didn't even have health insurance in South Carolina as a teacher. D.C. has health, dental, and eye coverage. The kicker is she'll open the year teaching her courses online from right here in South Carolina. See, this is why we can't have nice things in South Carolina. Well, you wouldn't want the teachers having that old health insurance. That just gives them a reason to lollygag and lay out sick and malinger and be going to the doctor all the time. Billable Rick with a question. Have you noticed that the upper Midwest and upper mountain region, including North and South Dakota, Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming, are now ablaze with COVID? I wonder if the week-long event in Sturgis had anything to do with that. Just asking for Giraffe, since his head's always in the clouds. I'm sure it plays a role in it. I have no doubt whatsoever. And speaking of Giraffe and Joey, Bob! I don't know where I heard this, but it's so true. More people have died drinking bleach than from the Ebola virus. I think that says it all. So for all of you hydrochloroquines, don't worry. Without delay, your bleach delivery is on the way, because heaven forbid that you should experience any of that Joe Biden left-wing darkness. Yes, the bleach will keep all your whites white and maybe even lighten up your disgusting dark side full of racism, hate, and criminal debauchery. Yes, the maggots must keep the White House white, even if it kills them. Giraffery wants to do a $50 challenge to brighten up the White House with some higher acumen and more colorful people. Biden-Harris 2020. This has been Joey's Journal for Friday, the 28th day of August, with Giraffery watching for the rainbow after the Trump shitstorm last night. Ever the optimist, Giraffery is. He's a high-minded fellow. See what I did there? High-minded. Giraffe. So there's a $50 challenge on the table that would go a long way toward knocking out the $335 that remain to finish the month of August. If Giraffery's brighten up the White House challenge is met, that'll take us down to $235, and we'll be that much closer to done with August. Thank you, Giraffery, and thank you, Joey. And what's that, Steve? Steve in New York says, I wonder, what's the over-under on which member of the Trump crime family gets the Trump-Rona virus from the super spreader event last night, or the first person there to spread it to someone else? I don't think they'd announce it. I don't think the bet is placeable, Steve, because they won't announce it. They're not going to talk about it anymore. They're going to decide that their silence means that it's just gone.
One day it'll just miraculously disappear.
And if you ever loathed Precious Princess I Wank 'Em a Daddy Trump Kushner, last night you got an even better reason to loathe her, as she told a story of one of her spawn making a Lego White House. Get the garbage bucket. Get the trash can. The barf bucket.
When Jared and I moved with our three young children to Washington, we didn't exactly know what we were in for. But our kids loved it from the start. My son, Joseph, promptly built Grandpa a Lego replica of the White House. The president still displays it on the mantle in the Oval Office right over there so that he can show world leaders, just so they know he has the greatest grandchildren on earth. I agree.
Welcome
to Rolling Stone News.
Isn't that just a darling little story? Doesn't that just warm the cockles of your heart? Whatever the cockles of one's heart. Right. I mean, what is it? Cockles and mussels, alive-o. Some sort of shellfish? People have shellfish in their hearts? Oh, I get so easily confused. That's my tad. As Todd and I were discussing last night, that's my tangent powers. Tangent man! Well, it turns out her Lego White House story, it didn't quite live up to, shall we say, scrutiny. Let's go back to 2017 when Precious Princess I Wank 'Em a Daddy Trump Kushner showed up on Conan O'Brien. I mean, not on Conan O'Brien, but you know what I mean. So, because curiously, she had a Lego story then, too.
You look beautiful. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, of course, a lot to talk about.
You know
about.
What is unique? How tall the three of us collectively are, I think.
That doesn't usually happen in show business.
No,
most people in show business are tiny, tiny people.
I feel like I'm frequently disappointed.
Yeah. So no. This is nice.
This is definitely a pleasure.
This is nice. And I work out.
Obviously.
Okay, then. Let's pretend that's true.
As true as the deep reservoir of calm, right?
Thanks. Yeah.
Sorry.
You are the vice president of development for the Trump Organization.
I am.
And I was reading an interview that you did, and you said you always wanted to do this. Even when you were a kid, you wanted to build skyscrapers. Is that true?
That is absolutely true, actually. Yeah. I remember one of my earlier Christmas gifts was a Barbie, and I was devastated because my brothers had gotten Legos and erector sets. Right. So to me, this, you know, is traumatic. And
you know, members of the Trump family should probably not ever use the word erector. Just saying. Wait, she wanted Legos?
You know, I wanted that, so I ended up taking my younger brother's Legos, bringing them into his room to add insult to injury,
right,
locking him out, taking my mother's super glue from the 1980s, there was plenty for her nails, and gluing the Legos together in a model of Trump Tower. So my father, in scolding me, also was never so proud. So, you know, my little brother's crying. He's saying, Ivanka, that's terrible. But at the same time, he looked very proud.
I was so proud. She'd proven to be a thieving grifter just like her old man.
Your father comes in the room and he sees that you've built a skyscraper out of Legos.
Skyscraper of Legos, yeah. Ruined the Christmas present completely. But one of the most amusing things, and I think is so typical of him and his parenting style and just how he is that 4 days later he actually came up to me and goes, you know, Ivanka, this has been bothering me. Keep in mind, I'm 6 years old. And I go, what, Dad? And he goes, you know, the other day when you made a model of Trump Tower with these Legos, you made 5 setbacks in the architectural facade of the building. There are only 4. So
Jesus Christ, and that's supposed to be endearing. Then there's the passage from The Art of the Deal.
You know, the other day when you made a model of Trump Tower with these Legos, you made 5 setbacks in the architectural facade of the building. There are only 4. So this had been bothering him for 4 days, Ivanka continued. He was thinking how to tactfully tell me that there were 4 instead of 5 setbacks. He could not let it go. He could not let it go. That's not the sign of love or paternal fondness. That's the sign of a debilitating level of narcissism and, well, what, obsessive-compulsive disorder. Jesus. Oddly enough, even Nitwit Nero has a story. His now-dead brother, Robert, apparently had some blocks that Nitwit Nero took from him. And these people. These awful people. How bad are you when you just lie about trivial shit? It's pathetic, but also indicative of a family whose dysfunction, you know, they say beauty's only skin deep, but ugly goes clean to the bone. So does dysfunction. Meanwhile, a note from Mighty Mouse, back to cockles for a minute. The sage Tommy Smothers once said, "Who wants cold cockles?" Well, these are the kinds of questions that trouble our minds. Darlene with a question: is that Iwanka's way of implying that her daddy cares about children? Maybe Ivanka should ask the children separated from their families, you know, the immigrant children in cages in concentration camps. Maybe she should ask them about that. Maybe she should give them some Lego sets to play with as booby prizes and make sure and tell them there's only 4 setbacks in the architectural facade of the Trump dump. Jesus. Well, like I said, come tomorrow here in the hills and hollers of Appalachia, we'll be dealing with the lingering after effects of Hurricane Laura. But
There's a story that came out of Lake Charles, Louisiana, according to KRMG. Back when Jim Crow was really being ground into the necks of African Americans, early part of the 20th century, in this case about 1915, the city fathers and mothers in Lake Charles, Louisiana, erected, a statue called the South's Defenders. Curiously, they didn't do a very good job defending the South, being how they got stomped. 1915, they erected a monument, the South's Defenders. You know, it's got the usual boy in butternut carrying a Confederate flag. And not long back, like less than a month ago, the city government of Lake Charles, Louisiana, in meeting assembled, had themselves a little debate and a vote. And they voted that they was going to cling tenaciously to their heritage. Their Southern heritage. And that, as God is my witness, we will not take down the South's Defenders. Enter Hurricane Laura. Nature bats last, racist dumbasses. You know, Laura landed, came ashore as a Category 4 hurricane. And the next thing you knew, the South's Defenders was blown off of its pedestal and flopped onto its side at the base. It was a 10-5 vote to remove the South's Defenders. And the bronze boy in butternut, it fell a good 25-30 feet. Because the goddess of irony is not to be fucked with. And so now, the city government of Lake Charles, Louisiana, has a choice to make. Will we use city funds, or perhaps insurance funds, I don't know, to go to the monumental trouble of bringing in a big old crane to hoist that thing back up? And it looks like the South's Defenders got himself a broken leg now. Hoist that thing back up and then have somebody reattach it to the top of the spire. Or will they just cart it away and, put it up somewhere else, like in a museum of, it'll be appropriate there in a museum of the Civil War and the Reconstruction and its aftermath. This is the kind of bilious horse shit that people who, that racists put up to try to reinforce Jim Crow and segregation and apartheid in the post-Civil War South. It would, with proper interpretation, it can be useful. But even the South's Defenders couldn't withstand 150-mile-an-hour hurricane winds. Nope, not hardly. Let's see here. So again, here at about 5 minutes before the hour, a reminder, if you'd like to participate in Friday on the Front Porch, click that little button at the top of headon.live, and that'll take you, that'll get you right into the conversation. Oh, and here's another. Because there's always one of these. It matters little. There's one of these every day. Brandon Marshall is a former wide receiver in the NFL. And he was, he'd moved into new digs there in Florida. And like Jacob Blake, he had his kids in the car. And he went home. And as he went to his home in what one presumes to be a gated community, I mean, there's a security detail. There's security guards in blue polyester sport coats. Well, they showed up and called the cops on the guy who was going to, who was trying to enter his own daggum house. Here's the audio.
Problem. This is the problem. This is the problem. I come here, you feel uncomfortable. My first day moving into my new house. Because my name's not on the list, you call the cops. Now you call the cops. No, you're not trying to do your job.
And he turns the camera around, and there's a black police officer standing there with a mask on, doing it right. And he just kind of, hey, and gives a wave. Because the two white security guys have called the cops on the guy who owns the daggum house.
No, there was no threat for you to call the cops. This is what we're seeing every single day. This is what we're seeing every single day. I got two kids in the car right now. We're in Western Florida, one of the most affluent areas. Yes, I know there's other black people who live here. I know that.
But even though there's other black people who live there, well, you can't just have black folks just wandering willy-nilly into houses that they've fucking bought. I mean, where does that all lead? Brandon Marshall went on and said, it's real. I was so disappointed in myself for getting so emotional with my kids in the car. But then I realized that being numb isn't an option anymore. I've been watching and processing the same injustice and unrest as you all the last few months. We've experienced this pain our entire lives. The awareness and conversations being started by the protests are great, but it can't end there. I'm tired of talking that leads to nowhere. I'm calling on powerful networks to take a chance and showcase the most important message in our country right now. The path toward real change flows through the ballot box. The power belongs in the people's hands. I'm not telling you to vote or who to vote for. I'm reminding you that you can vote. It is your right to have your voice heard. Well, I guess this is just, who was the African-American professor trying to go into his house? They got the cops called on him. Yeah, up in, what, Cambridge, Massachusetts? And there had to be a beer summit over that, remember? Henry Louis Gates, was it? Yeah. You know, you can't fix a problem until you want to fix a problem. And one of the fundamental issues in America today is the number of white people who don't want to fix this problem. The entirety of the Republican Party does not want to fix this problem. Their obsequious, fawning, sycophantic black membership does not want to fix this problem. It's something that's going to have to be done without them, because they're going to scream and squeal and shriek and squeak all along the way. Trying to trying to keep justice from being done and something resembling equality from coming to America. And I don't know how anybody managed to watch that thing last night without a bucket by their side. Sure, there was Precious Princess Iwanka, and as Eileen in New York said, "Oh, that off-the-shoulder dress," talking about Precious Princess Iwanka, my daddy Trump Kushner. "I couldn't get over her off-the-shoulder dress. Would the world still exist if Michelle, sleeveless dress, had worn such a look? Oh my God, Eileen, the shrieking could be heard on the surface of the celestial body formerly known as Pluto. But if Iwanka comes along wearing her cavewoman dress, well, I-O-K-I-Y-A-W-R, it's okay if you're a white Republican." Well, you're right, Steve. Steve in New York says, it's not that we're not just going to have to do it without the maggots. We're going to have to do it in spite of them. See, in regard to Brandon Marshall's video, Steve says, see, they're abolitioning the suburbs. White suburban moms will no longer be safe. Of course. Kyle pointing out, well, Bob, isn't it obvious black people don't and can't live in nice communities? Jesus fucking Christ, fuck this shit. I second that emotion. Anyway, chinless Mitch McConnell declared himself the sole guardian of middle America. And among other things, shat on the idea of statehood for the people who live in the District of Columbia. And said the quiet part out loud. We can't let them be a state. They don't deserve to get to vote and elect senators, because they wouldn't never give us no Republican senators. Which is the same argument made with regard to Puerto Rico. Because Mitch McConnell knows one thing better than anything else. His party is, for all intents and purposes, dead as a national party. It is a rump party comprised of that survives largely because of inequitable systems that apportion votes in gerrymandered House districts and survives in states largely of the old Confederacy. And like the woolly mammoth trapped in the La Brea tar pit, or that there was one of those in Waco, Texas, too. There's a really great display at the Natural History Museum there. Standing up to its shoulders in tar and sinking by the second, and bellowing, trumpeting to the heavens its outrage at being taken out of the evolutionary mix. That's Republicans. He actually began his speech saying, "Well, I'm always looking out for middle America." We recently found out that filthy Russian aluminum outfit that's trying to pump money into Mitch McConnell's state, and save his reelection. Well, they're an active arm of the Russian government itself. Rusal is the name of that company. Yeah, McConnell. Disgusting. So here we are at the top of the hour. It's time we check in with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable Group. A reminder, Giraffe's challenge remains on the table. A $50 challenge to brighten up the White House with some higher acumen and more colorful people. Biden-Harris 2020. If that's met, that'll take us down to $235 to go to finish the month and the week. So hopefully that'll get knocked out, and that challenge will not be left a-sitting on the table. Thank you, Giraffe, and thank you, Joey. Five setbacks, says James in Illinois, who knows a little bit about construction. More than a little bit. Do you realize how tall a Lego building would have to be to accomplish five setbacks in a Lego model of that POS tower of mud? Even for rich kids, that's a lot of Legos. What it sounds to me like is a contrived story that Donnie put his daughter up to just to make it sound like, oh, gee whiz, aren't those drums amazing? Fuck all of them, says James. Gluing them all together? That's something else that didn't happen. An evil prodigy? Nah, didn't happen. And I think James is right, because, again, there is a predecessor story involving Robert's blocks and Donnie. They lie just to be lying. Holy shit. Hey, Sparky, what's happening?
Oh, just sitting, watching the trees, the leaves blow. A little bit of breeze.
Are you
no
out?
Smoke today.
No smoke today. Are you outside or?
No, I'm looking through my window.
Sparky's color weather window.
Yeah. Well, it's hot. It's 96 degrees. The smoke is just kind of blew away, I guess, but the fire's still going.
Yeah, the wind helps that. It just happens to be blowing away from you, I guess.
Is it? The fire's like 70,000 acres. They got it 30% contained.
Jesus.
But it's burned mostly in places where people don't live now.
Wow. So, hot?
Yeah, it's 96 degrees here.
Oh, well.
Our summer won't end until probably October.
So you probably won't be folding space during months that do have ours in them.
I might not begin in September. But, I mean, it gets... The temperature will drop down in September, but then, you know, sometimes it goes back up. I remember first weekend of October years and years ago, I was out on a boat on Lake Shasta, first weekend of October, it was 104 degrees.
Jesus. So what's your county's COVID update, Sparky?
We're about to break 400. We're at 398.
Jesus.
But the high school, they had a big article in the paper today about the high school going good. So they're in the third week. They've only had to send six students home for not passing the temperature test. And then their protocol is if you don't pass the temperature test, and they screen, the teachers screen at first period class. They stand outside door, and then before they go in the classroom, she takes everybody's temperature, and they have to answer the standard COVID question list. And if they test,
I mean, are they actually administering COVID tests when the kids fail the temperature test?
Yeah, they can't come back until they've taken had a negative COVID test.
Well, we're at here in my county. We're at 235 and 10 dead. That's two more dead people in the last week or so. Today was cars from South Carolina, Florida, Pennsylvania, and New York. Hey.
You didn't hear it last week, but I told everybody else after the show I got a jury summons.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I filled out the reasons to get a delay, dismissal, or reschedule. I put on there my age, 69, high risk COVID-19. And I sent it back, and I haven't heard anything from them.
But up your way, your COVIDiots have been getting busy, haven't they?
Well, they're still going to town in Shasta County. They had another Board of Supervisors meeting this week, and they had one group, Facebook group, and it's got like 3,000 followers. It's in Redding, open up Shasta County. They had another protest out in front of the county admin building, and they let people come in one at a time and speak to the supervisors, rage and complain. I don't think there was anybody else threatening to get their guns.
Well, I've got a clip here, and for once it's actually not some COVIDiot throwing a hissy. This is a significantly pissed off pro-mask person. The story comes from Colorado. The Golden Moon Speakeasy. It's a restaurant and distillery. And a 62-year-old dude named John Roche got into an argument last week over Golden, Colorado, home of Coors. Golden, Colorado City Council put a mask mandate in place. And this John Roche attacked an employee of the restaurant distillery, tried to push him through a door. And the owner of the business got downright hot about it. And so he didn't hide his light under a bushel, as the saying goes.
And we had a state of Jefferson goobers do a Blue Lives Matter rally. I think they were at the clock tower.
Those things are dead giveaways now. Anybody who makes that argument, well, you've learned all you need to know about them. The TV station there in Golden had the footage. Let's check in.
Shoved that employee to the ground after the worker was just explaining the state rule about masks in public places. Our Alan Janay on our top story tonight. And Alan, the owner thinks the punishment in these cases really ought to be more severe.
Mayor, we had a discussion about that, Bill. Tonight, the man accused in this attack is facing a citation for harassment and trespassing. Not harsh enough, says the former Marine who owns the Golden Moon Distillery and Speakeasy. This left a worker injured, and it opened a lot of discussion about enforcement.
Stands up.
The video tells the story. Distiller and bar restaurant owner Stephen Gould does the play-by-play.
The gentleman walks up. My employees asked him to put on a mask because he can't be in here. He immediately sat down without being seated. They continued to argue, and he came up and he essentially body slammed him, bouncing him off of the door frame and shearing this latch off the door frame.
Then the server goes down with
a lot of force, abrasions on my employee's back, big bruise on my employee's back.
Other customers step in. Gould comes out. There's more arguing, and he says more threats from the man. Police cited 62-year-old John Roche of Golden.
This guy, John Roche, is so full of anger and so self-entitled that someone doing something as simple as saying, hey, it's the law, you need to wear a mask, is in his mind justification to attack somebody.
The place next door tonight, people talked about masks.
It's a personal responsibility. Make everybody feel comfortable and just to be responsible at the same time for us.
Gould, meantime, is angered that the penalties are not tougher.
Every single business that deals with the public, their employees are at risk because there are members of the public that are angry, that are anti-mask, and that are willing to attack people simply for asking them to put a mask on.
Well, we called Roach, but he indicated he did not want to comment about it. Golden police say the harassment accusation is the same penalty potentially as assault. But Gould says he wants to talk to Golden leaders. And he also points out that in the state of Illinois, it's now possible to charge someone with aggravated battery if they attack a worker trying to enforce a mask order. Jim and Karen, back to you. I'm Alan Janay reporting live tonight, covering Colorado First. All right.
Well, you know, it that should be a thing. We're gonna have to do something like that, Sparky. There are gonna have to be criminal penalties attached to this mask hole COVIDiot maggot behavior. Otherwise, where's the disincentive for people not to do it?
Biden and Camelot said they're not gonna make a penalty on it. They're just going to make it a national mandate when they get in.
Yeah. But at some point,
see that,
at some point, it's going to have the force of law behind it.
See that sign, a picture I posted in the Skype chat?
Let me see here. Yeah.
That's what people should post at their businesses.
To accommodate anti-maskers, we have provided a space 40 feet west where you can stare at your reflection in the window, since apparently you're the only person you care about. Perfect.
Surprised me when I went in a grocery store last week.
Yeah.
The last time. They actually had an employee there with a box of masks ready to give out a free mask to anybody that wanted to come in with a mask.
I've noticed that with several businesses in Beckley. They'll give you a mask. And because I had to take Ferg to work today, I had to kill a little time in Beckley. And went in a couple of stores, and that was the case. And that was, well, they're trying. Dick's Sporting Goods, Belk's, both were giving away masks. And it's the right thing to do.
We had a city, Red Bluff, was giving out masks to businesses so they could give them to a customer. You know, like if they were restaurants or whatever, but everything's outside dining now here still.
I won't go in a restaurant. I won't.
I know. We got put on the county got put on the state watch list, but they haven't said anything about closing down schools.
Well, I stopped and got curbside delivery at the horror Olive Garden. And at least, the server was wearing a mask. I was wearing a mask. They bring the food out, and you're done.
Yeah. My minion called me the other day where he lives now. He started high school.
Yeah.
So everybody has to wear a mask, and everything's going okay with him. He shocked me. He's a freshman. He says, oh, by the way, I got a girlfriend. I said, you do?
Of course he does.
And I says, how are you going to be able to go out on dates or anything? He says, well, we just do a lot of FaceTime, see each other at school.
The question is, does she know she has a boyfriend?
See, I was waiting for somebody. Thank you, Roger.
Well, he didn't say.
Oof. Well, it looks like we've got a good gang in the room this evening. Hey, Steve in New York. Steve in Georgistan, sorry. How you feeling, buddy?
Muted.
Yeah, it takes a minute.
I'm in the other room. How you doing, brother? I'm doing okay, man.
You're in the other room. Okay.
Yeah, I was making tea. I said, he'll call on me when I'm in here making the tea. And it's Murphy's Law, man.
No, it's the tremendous powers granted me by the goddess of irony, Steve.
That's I'm doing good, Bob. Thanks for asking.
Because it sounded like you'd had a booger of a day.
Yeah, just hopping from doctor to doctor is no fun, you know.
And in your case, literally hopping.
Yes, one-legged. Primary care thought she could handle a procedure and realized she was in over her head, which I respect that. You know, it's takes intelligence to realize, to know your your limitations. So I didn't get mad, but had to drive 50 miles to a specialist to get the procedure done. But it's all good. It's all behind me now. Hurt the day. An ice pack can be your friend after minor surgery. So,
oh yeah, those little blue gel ice packets that you can keep in the freezer. Those things are handy as hell sometimes.
Oh, hell yeah. If you ever get, seafood, those packs that they ship them in, you can refreeze them.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Bob, call on somebody else. Miss Karen's calling me. Got to see what she wants.
Hey to Miss Karen. All right, well, let's just keep it in the Steves and see what Steve in New York's up to. Steve's unmuted.
I have a mute on my headset.
Ah.
Can you hear me okay? Because I actually heard the thing from last week, and I don't know. I was having problem with my what's those little things you put in your ear? AirPods.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize it. And until I was talking to somebody else on them, and they said, what the hell's going on? And so, yeah, it was some sort of problem, and I apologize for that.
Well, I don't know if you're outside or walking around or something, but you're a little bit windy.
Well, no, I'm inside. I have a fan on in my office because they turned the air conditioner off. So I just turned it way down. So there shouldn't be anything there. I got my voted for Trump. You're a fucking idiot mask, which I'm wearing.
Very nice.
We'll see what happens. See if I get beaten up in Queens. We'll see.
Yeah.
If I do, I will still wear it. And in fact, if I get beat up, I will wear it even more.
Well, truth isn't in your business. Truth is an absolute defense.
I wanted to also give you an update. I'm still looking for mask stuff. That stuff is just gone from all the places that I went to before, so it may take me a little bit of extra time to find them, but I'll find them. I also tried to go to Home Depot was selling them, and I actually had pretty good prices, but they're not selling any PPE to the public.
Right, it's all reserved for medical personnel.
Yes. So I tried, and no. I wanted to tell you, I don't remember if I say so much to so many people, I don't remember what I say and what I don't say. Did I tell you about my friend who's the emergency room nurse up in the Bronx?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I asked him how he was doing. He says they are already preparing for a second wave in September.
Well, they're wise to be doing that because it's coming.
It's coming. I don't know. I've gotten to the point where, you know, I sometimes listen to your filthy morning habit. Somebody was on there the other day. I think
Joe
it was on there.
Joe Bout had a baby this morning.
I will say this. They've been getting pretty harsh against Trump. I mean, he just finds Trump reprehensible.
Now,
but even though
you need a preposition, he just finds Trump reprehensible now. He wasn't so reprehensible four years ago.
Sure. Okay. Yeah, I was just going to say that. I was just going to say. On the other hand, every time I hear him say that, in the back of my mind, I'm going, "Yeah, Joe, but you know, you need to own up to the part that you played in putting him where he is." So no, I hear you, but I think it was on there. I don't know where it was. Somebody was talking about that. You know, we cannot be, you know, calling the Trumpansies stupid or the Trump supporters just dumb and writing them off, and we have to listen to them. And I'm thinking, why the fuck is it up to us?
Yeah.
To be constantly
Since when do they listen to anyone but them, but their own echo chamber? Fuck them.
You know what? They're never, you know. And you and I talked about this a long time ago on another front porch. Elections, at least right now, and in the not so recent past, and for the foreseeable future, are not about convincing anyone of anything. They're about turnout. I'm not going to convince them. They're not going to convince me. Republicans don't convince anyone of they don't convince anyone. We're not going to convince them. This is about turnout.
Well, and there have been a number of stories, Steve, in the last couple of weeks that say that plainly and simply put, this election turns on how many voters the Democrats can turn out. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the Lincoln Project can peel away, because if Trump's approval rating's like 91% in the GOP, if they can peel, you know, 4, 5, 6% off of that, that's great. That is immensely helpful. But the bottom line is that Democrats have to turn out with a will and with a vengeance, and they have to vote like their lives depend on it, because they do.
Because they do. You know, here's a little bit of irony. You know, the unspoken, or perhaps, we'll say unspoken, quote-unquote, hope, at least of me, is that what the Lincoln Project stuff does, and the shit that Trump just continues to do, essentially makes, you know, certain Republicans say, I can't vote for him again, but I can't vote for a Democrat. I'm just not going to the polls, or I'm going to vote for, you know, the right-wing version of Jill
Stein.
Don
Blankenship. Constitution Party nominee Don Blankenship for president.
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, everyone's talked about this a lot, about the notion of politics. Maybe there was a time when there was something noble about debates and trying to convince people. But those days, at least for a while, are gone.
I think you're right.
I actually agree. I don't know if you saw Nancy Pelosi basically said, I don't know why they're going to debate. I mean, what's to debate? You know, this is this stupid dog and pony show we have to go through. I mean, who watches the debate? You watch the debate and go, boy, Trump's a fucking idiot. Oh boy, look, Biden got him, or whoever got him there, and they look at and a Trumpansie looks at the debate and say, boy, he's really owning the libs. Boy, he really got him. So what's the purpose? I would love to see a candidate actually go, you want a debate? Okay, let's have a debate. And I don't mean a debate like this shit where it's not really a debate. It's one person says something, one person says something else, one person says something else. Let's have a debate. Like Lincoln Douglas debate, or I don't know if you ever had seen the Kerry Weld debates back in the mid to late 80s for the Senate race in Massachusetts. If anybody has wants to see some great lessons in debating and political whatever, look up the on YouTube. Hello, Scott. I'm talking to you. Look up the YouTube stuff of
Bill Weld, William Weld, and John Kerry. Yeah,
John Kerry. They were great. you know, it's two people who had very different views. And whatever you think about Bill Weld, the guy's no slouch. He's no dummy.
No, he was probably the last actual somewhat liberal Republican. With an emphasis on the somewhat.
Yes, yeah, somewhat. And you know, he claimed to be the libertarian, but he was actually a libertarian, not these weirdo.
Well, he ran as the libertarian vice presidential candidate in 16 underneath Gary Johnson.
What is Aleppo?
Yes.
But you know what I'm saying? I mean, Weld was like,
yo, Semite, Aleppo.
Yeah.
Your laugh.
Yeah.
For the ages.
That's one of them. And then I have the cackle. But so I'm trying, Bob. I have a couple of, and all on the bagel front, what I had intended to do was go to Essa Bagel and buy them myself. But my vacuum sealer is in storage. So I'm going to get them, I'm just going to have them shipped directly from Essa Bagel, which is probably good anyway because they'll put dry ice in there to make sure they stay cold.
Right.
So, good call. But I'm going to do it. It's just easier than going to Essa Bagel and getting them because I think their hours are also they're only open till 5 o'clock and they're closed on Fridays. And I don't know. There might be open. Might be closed Saturday as well.
I would guess it's from sundown Friday to sundown Saturday. Just guessing.
Yeah, they are. So they're coming. I got the preferences. So haven't forgotten. It's just taken me a little bit more time than normal.
They got so many different flavors there. It's just it's mouthwatering just to look at the menu.
Mm-hmm. And you know what? That menu. There were things I remembered at the store that weren't on the menu. So I suspect that the menu that we looked at was probably more limited than what they would have if you went there.
Yeah, or their, you know, their stock rotates more quickly in the actual brick and mortar. Sure.
Yes. Yeah, but they will be on the way soon.
Well, hey, I just noticed that...
Hi, guys.
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
Hey, guys, it's Darlene.
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you're good.
Oh, good, because I finally downloaded Skype to my iPhone, and I'm talking to you from my brand new deck edition on the back of the house, and I'm so excited because I'm sitting out here listening to the program. And
you got your deck done just in time for the lovely fall colors, Darlene.
Exactly. That's
you can
what
sit on your deck and watch everything die.
Exactly, yes. But the cool thing is I'm watching like seven swallows flying in the high skies. They're incredible acrobats, and I guess they're going after – there must be some hatches of some – I think there's like ant creatures with the wings and stuff. I think they're really feeding off of those. My deck edition is about 90% done, and because guess what? The rest of the material that I need is back ordered 2 months.
Beautiful.
because of all the New Yorkers that have moved into Connecticut because of COVID-19, they have nothing to do and shit tons of money to spend. So they're doing all kinds of construction. And so
good for the local economy.
Exactly. They're buying up all of the materials for decking and home construction and everything. So I'm lucky that I got what I got, but I'm so excited. And Steve, I got your email about Bernie Sanders. I haven't responded. I did hear him, but I've actually taken the week off, and I just need to decompress because my brain is totally fried. But I do want to talk to you about bagels and masks and everything else at some point. But Bob, you had asked Sparky about statistics in terms of how his county is doing with COVID-19. And I'm really happy to report that my county in Connecticut, which is known as Litchfield County, has no COVID-19 cases in the hospital and is below 1%. But the next county over, which is known as Danbury County, Fairfield County, but it's the city of Danbury, is seeing a spike of 6 to 7%. And a couple of my family members who are big fishermen were furious because they shut down the ramp and boat access to this lake known as Candlewood Lake, which borders three communities, including Danbury. And they shut it down, and my family members were blaming the governor, but I said, I don't think it's him, because he wants to keep the parks and the lakes and everything wide open, because that encourages people getting out in the fresh air and social distancing and everything. But several reports came in that people were having huge super spreader event parties at the boat launches at Candlewood Lake. So the town officials closed down the boat launches and said, no one can come here. And I'm glad they're doing it. And Danbury, which is one of the communities that borders Candlewood Lake, is seeing a spike of 6 to 7% in COVID-19. And apparently the governor is warning them. He's saying, you need to pick up the phone when the officials call you to do contact tracing. You need to pick up the phone and talk to them. So Connecticut is really, they're clamping down. They also have some really, really, really good, they're requiring people who leave the state to register, like if they're going to one of the, I think it was like four, maybe it dropped to 12, but there's 12 to 14 of the COVID-19 states that are considered quote unquote the red states, where COVID-19 is spiking. They are requiring that anyone leaving the state file health forms, health certificates, and that when they come back in to Connecticut from one of those spiking COVID-19 states, they have to quarantine for 14 days. If they don't file the health form, they're charged a $1,000 fine or more. So some idiot had left the state, didn't file the form, came back and started working, and a coworker ratted the individual out. That individual was charged for $1,000 for not filing health form, and was charged another $1,000 for a total of $2,000 for not quarantining for 14 days after coming back.
You know, I guess that sounds harsh, but good.
It's good.
Yeah.
I'm totally on board with it.
And Robert in Australia has told us in the past, down there, you can face upwards of $11,000 in fines for being a scofflaw.
Good. It needs to be done. It has to be done, because enough is enough.
And I mean, some of it I understand. I mean, I saw a meme, Kermit the Frog in it, of course. I'm so tired of saying, oh shit, my mask, like I'm Batman or some shit. I understand that. I mean, I've you know, gotten out of the car and fuck, and you know, turn around and go back to the car and get the mask.
Same here. Yeah, I forget. You forget.
And you're like, you know, in a way, you're pissed at yourself, because it's like, what? I suddenly forgot there's a fucking pandemic on.
Yeah.
But you get the mask and you put it on. That's a far cry from some dickhead in Golden, Colorado, who tries to shove a worker through a door for saying, hey, you got to have a mask.
And we had an incident at a Walmart here in Connecticut. I can't remember where it was, where the individual was hugging people and kissing people. He just would go up to random individuals and said, okay, you've got COVID-19. So that person was reported. And the one, I think the governor's health, COVID-19 czar, whoever he was, said, that is a crime. That's an assault and battery, it's a crime.
Yeah, you had your cup of coffee in law school.
I certainly did.
And you know the old economy.
I practiced for 5 years, too, so yeah. I went beyond that. Yeah.
But, you know, that the old common law definition being of battery is being subjected to an unconsented to touching of an insulting or provoking nature. You know, a cough is a touching.
Yes, exactly. I think it's a battery is if you're in fear, like the person is threatening and you're in fear.
That's assault.
That is assault. And then when they, yes, that is an assault. And then when they actually act it out or touch you, there's your battery.
Bingo.
Assault battery, yeah.
And then if there is an instrumentality used, it can rise to the level, and I know Billable Rick knows this too, it can rise to the level of aggravated battery.
Right.
Which often becomes a felony.
Yep.
And how much more of an aggravated battery can you get than a deadly disease?
Exactly. And more than likely, the particular individual who did that sounded nuts and probably will claim, you know, mental instability or mental illness or whatever to get out, to basically get a lesser sentence when they get this guy, because they will find him. Connecticut is taking a very serious stance on this. Serious. And I'm glad that they are, because I think it's become more or less, I think for the governor and all of those who are working on this, it's now become a source of serious, like a pride in a way, like we're doing it right. And we want to keep it right, because I think we're one of the states that's actually keeping it. I think overall the state is keeping it below 1% in terms of the infection rate. So I think that, you know, we clearly Danbury is going to screw up our it's going to screw up our under 1%. And people are serious about, you know, I know people in my county, for the most part, we're serious about it. But we can't really control what other people are doing. We've got a lot. I have a lot of New Yorkers moving into my town. A lot have moved into my town to escape what's going on in New York. And that's okay, but Jesus, do your part.
Jesus, Darlene, it's 2020, and we are living through Escape from New York.
Exactly.
Ha, 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 ha.
You know, and you know, hey Steve, I love New Yorkers as long as they're respectful, and some are, and we have a lot who aren't. They're assholes.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
I feel that way about people from Jersey.
Oh, we feel that way about, well, I've been through that too. New Jerseyites are even worse than New Yorkers, and Massachusetts people, they're just clueless and, you know, whatever. We love them all, but we expect that they're going to be respectful of our laws. And a lot of them are not, you know, and some are. And we actually in my town, we think that the New Yorkers that have infiltrated my little town are going to help us become more progressive, because they're seeing stuff they don't like with our Republican selectmen and Republican dominated board of selectmen. I think they're seeing things that they don't like, and we're looking for them to join with Democrats to basically make things better in our town. So we see some value to that. We see a lot of value to that, but I've also heard other stories where they've been utterly, incredibly disrespectful, and that's not cool, you know. So mm-hmm. I'm open minded, and
I'm not.
You're welcome, but you know,
I'm not.
Be nice.
I'm not.
Be respectful. You know.
Can let me ask you. Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Yeah. When you say 1%, what do you mean?
The under 1% infection rate.
You mean like the R sub 0?
Bob, you've talked about this. It's like you have
yeah, the
to
R,
like,
yeah, the R no, yeah, that's like yeah, she's I think she's talking about the R number, Steve.
Okay. Because no, I mean I looked at Kovacs now, who have I really soured on, and they said that Connecticut is at 1.17.
And I've questioned that. Whenever you've said that, I'm like, I know. This doesn't tally. Yeah, this
Well, the problem
tally.
Is, here's the problem. Even the states that are quote-unquote like doing it right with the testing and the contact tracing are not really doing it very well by the standards of, say, the WHO. The fact of the matter is this, is as a country – there are certain parts of the country that are doing it okay, which is New York and all those. But we're not. The unfortunate thing is the horse has left the barn. We're not, and I talk about this with somebody. I don't even remember. We're not in a. We are in. We are in damage control. We are not. We're not. We're beyond being preventative in
Agreed.
The U.S.
Agreed.
Yeah, we are past prophylaxis.
Yes.
Agreed. Yes. Guys. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yes. So, you know,
it's plugging the dikes. It's like plugging the.
We
dikes
are putting we. Dikes, we yeah. Or I think it's like, you ever seen the trick where the person spins the plates on the sticks and they have to keep running around and continuing to spin the plates, and sometimes some of them fall. It's the same concept. That's what we're doing. It's just there's not enough fingers. There's not enough people who care about the leaking dike. There's not enough fingers from those people. So, you know, we're doing what we can.
Right.
I don't, you know, I just, I look at these, again, I look at the statistics, and there's some stuff that I don't understand, that don't make any sense to me. I actually there was two guys from CNN who wrote an article earlier this week where they said that according to John's, or that the infections were waning, and I texted him back. I said, yes, but you know, you don't even address the fact that that July 17th, you can look at the graph right there, the 7-day average. You look at the 7-day average.
Well, and it's the other flaw, Steve, is no. It seems like no one's taking into account that you can't find cases you're not looking for. The decrease in testing. I saw a graphic representation, you know, the map with the colors, and it showed the entire Deep South is decreasing. Bullshit.
but if you look at the testing, you look at the testing ratios of per million, which is how they register. You know, they have insufficient testing. The problem is. Or what these guys said, and they're right about this. They use the data from Johns Hopkins, and Johns Hopkins uses state reported data, which is there's a website which is the one I use for a lot of what I look at, is called the COVID Tracking Project, which the Atlantic Monthly magazine tracks. The problem is the guy tweeted me back to say, oh, well, we use the state stuff. And I said, well, you clearly didn't read the website to find out the source of their data, because the number of – it says what I just said, the COVID Tracking Project. And the number of deaths that the COVID Tracking Project has on there is about 8,000 less than on the Johns Hopkins website, even though Johns Hopkins says that's
right.
Where they get their data.
And take into account idiocy like we have going on here in West Virginia, where, as I mentioned a couple of weeks ago – if you've got 20 cases in a nursing home, make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice has ordered that be counted as one case.
Oh, my God. But, like, some sites count only COVID-related, directly related, which I suspect means it was indicated on the death certificate COVID COVID was the cause, whereas there's 8 to 10,000, it seems to me. Another site that I look at, what they include is deaths that weren't directly COVID-related, but COVID was a, I don't want to say secondary reason, but it caught it. You know what I'm saying? It's like I didn't die of cancer, for instance. I died because I got COVID, and I had cancer, and together I died from it. So some sites don't count that as a COVID death.
Well, to wander over into the fields of law, there's a concept out there of superseding causation.
Right.
And then there's there's another concept. I forget what it's called, but it's where the event makes a pre-existing condition manifestly worse.
And that's intervening.
Yeah, intervening and superseding causation. Right.
Mm-hmm.
In superseding, one completely overwhelms the other, but in intervening causation, it exacerbates.
And you know what, guys? I also think, markers that are being used to say, you know, we're doing really well can be brought up for questioning. Like, here in Connecticut, at least, one of the markers is whether the number of hospitalizations. And I've always felt that was very dubious because people may have COVID-19, but not go to a hospital for a multitude of reasons until maybe things are so dire that it's like, okay, they need to be rushed to the hospital and put on a ventilator. I mean, I know personally, I would not want to go to my local hospital emergency room unless it was absolutely necessary. So, you know, the fact that, oh, we have zero hospitalizations in my county, I feel like that's kind of like, I'm not so sure that's something that I can put money in the bank on as being indicative that we're doing well, because there may be, and it could be financial, it could be a lack of health insurance.
Darlene, it's everything. Literally right. Everything. Consider the fact that Dr. Fauci was under general anesthesia and unavailable for consultation when the CDC, and they say that it was as a result of a discussion inside the task force, which means, Mike Pencil Neck Geek saying, you know, we got to do it this way.
Because Jesus told me that.
Yeah, because the voice in my head that I'm pretty sure is Jesus told me. You know, they said, well, you know, it's no longer necessary to get a test just because you come into contact with somebody with COVID. And Fauci freaked. He said, they didn't ask me anything about this. I was under general anesthesia, and I'm very concerned about this. So now they've kind of walked it back. And now they say, well, you know, I mean, if you've been in contact with somebody with COVID-19... you might want to get a test. I mean, who are we to tell you? I mean, we're just the Centers for Disease Control. And so they walked it back, but they still haven't walked it back on their website.
Right, and I think that you know, like Joe Biden had said during his, which I thought was probably the most epic speech he's ever given at the end of the DNC convention, where it was very clear that he knows the Democrats know that in order for us to go to move forward, we need to get the virus under control. And I almost feel like the tracking, the statistical analysis, all of that stuff almost needs to be so precise and so rigid to the point of, it's almost like we're in a state of authoritarianism when it comes right down to it, that has to be, like, if you don't check in, if you don't get tested, if you don't boom, 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 there's going to be fines. You're going to be arrested, whatever, because there's no way we're really going to have a handle on this until we have hard data. That's not like, well, oh, you know, we saw one case in this such and such nursing home, so multiply that by 100. That's not good enough.
No, that's still guessing.
That's not good enough for the greatest country on the earth.
No, that's still guessing. And,
exactly.
And you know, when
and Trump brought us to this. He brought us to this point.
Right. Well, Darlene, so, consider that during this past Cool Kids conclave, they didn't even bother with a platform, and I hadn't mentioned it until now. But that really said something to me. When one of the two major political parties doesn't even bother publishing a platform or adopting a platform, that says...
No, their platform was projection.
Well, that says that their platform, you know, platforms are aspirational documents, and we all understand that. We passed the most progressive platform ever in the history of the state of West Virginia in 2016. It didn't matter a hill of beans, because none of the major Democratic office holders had any idea, any intention of having anything to do with it. But what I'm getting at is, the Republicans couldn't publish a platform, because if they had, it would have been even more meaningless than usual. What the lack of a Republican platform means is that they are acknowledging that Trump, for them, is a dictator. Whatever Trump says is the Republican platform.
That's excellent. Yeah, absolutely. They got nothing, Bob. They got nothing. And all they did was, they ran home to mama. It was all fear-based. It was fear-based. The Republican National Committee, or whatever the hell it's called, the RNC, Trump, all of them ran home to mama, and it was all about fear. Unfounded, fear-based stuff. Socialism. They threw out all the buzzwords because all they give a shit about is that one-third, barely one-third, that will vote for Trump come hell or high water, no matter what.
I mean, let's
siphon off a little bit more.
David in South Carolina, Stan, just sent this along, and let me interject just for a moment to say thank you to Steve and Ms. Karen, little little Cletus and little Twiggy. We are $40 away from meeting Joey and Giraffe's Brighten Up the White House challenge. That's a big deal. That if that gets met with 40 more bucks, then that takes us down to 235 to finish the month. And we got an hour to finish the month then, if we can. And then we'll have a fundraising free Monday, which would be lovely. And mean it, because I love those moments when I don't have to sweat this stuff. But to your point, David in South Carolina, Stan, just sent along a story. Two data points. Out of Billable Rick's beloved Iowegia and Carol Baker's beloved Iowegia. University of Iowa reports 500 more student COVID-19 cases. That's today. And then this. Iowa sees record 2,579 coronavirus cases with a 79% positivity rate.
Oh, God.
And what happened is Iowa has begun including antigen tests in their results. And Iowa officials said, well, gosh, I mean, that's not going to have anything. That's not going to have any impact on the rates. But, well, out of 3,247 tests, 2,579 came back positive. And it's the first time ever that the number of positives have outnumbered the negatives.
Oh, over 2,000.
Yeah, and this, of course, is the state governed by Kim Reynolds, who showed up at the Cool Kids Conclave and blathered on and blathered on about the awesomeness of Donald Trump.
Well, I have three. Well, one niece and two nephews that are heading off to college, and I'm one of whom is a brand spanking new freshman going to Boston University, and they started inducting. Like, he chose to go. Because he's a freshman. He wants the college experience, and his parents are panicked, but they're supporting him.
He wants the hell out of the house, Darlene. Come on, I was 18 once.
Exactly, and I cannot blame the kid. I really can't, and I plan to contact him tomorrow, and I hate saying this to my nephews and nieces. I hate saying, don't party, because I remember very well, I'm not a mother, but I'm one of the cool aunts. Okay, I have five nephews and two nieces. And
you've always got a stick of gum in your purse, right?
You got it. You got it, brother. And it's like, the last thing I want to do is say, don't party, because when I broke free of my very restrictive home, I went and I did things I probably should. I regret, but I had my freedom. But it's like, this is so serious that I'm like, listen, I can't believe I'm saying this to you, but please stay away from the partying until this is under control. And already they started opening up Boston University August 15th. And my nephew's going 31st. My sister's freaking out. This is her first kid that's going off to college. And they've already got positive cases at BU. So it's like, it's not good. It's not a good situation. And I had a very bad dream about my nephew. I would never tell my sister, but it was not it was not good. And this thing is affecting me psychologically, where I'm like really worried about these kids, because even though they're young and they're vibrant and they're healthy and they're athletic and everything else, you really don't know. You don't know how it's going to affect you. Don't know.
Hey, everybody.
Hey there, Billable. How you
doing?
Hey,
yeah, I wish that I've been like doing Billable shit. I get a phone call from my boss. I have to get on an hour-long phone call. So I wish this is the one day out of the week. I wish I didn't live on the West Coast, because otherwise I'd be sipping like beers and shit like that if it was 7 o'clock, right?
Aww.
But yeah, I mean, to follow up on what you're talking about and Bob's talking about this rush to get college kids back in school, I don't fucking understand it.
I agree.
I have two words: remote learning. That's what they're doing for my kid, who was called back from UC Irvine, and he's been studying at home since like March now, and they're planning on doing remote learning in the fall as well. They've delayed the start of the term until I think maybe even October 1st or something like that. I don't know exactly, but until late September at least, because of COVID, hoping that's going to abate. But I mean, this is going to get worse and worse and worse.
I agree.
No matter what Trump fails to say or whatever, no matter how much he tries to ignore it, nature bats last. You ignore it at your peril. I mean, how many people in Trump's cabinet are going to keel over from COVID? I mean, Wilbur Ross, that guy is like as old as a sequoia.
He's older than Mr. He's older than Montgomery Burns, for fuck's sake.
Well, hey, Billable, your sweet boy there, is he a freshman or is he like an upperclassman?
No, he's like, actually, he's only gone, he went to community college a couple of years and went to his first year of university last year. So he's like kind of a senior, I guess, or maybe even.
Okay, that seems to be the issue, because one of my neighbors, her she also is going to Boston University. She's the sweetest thing, and she said, you know, one of my neighbor's daughters, and she's the sweetest thing. And she said, you know, oh, I'm so excited that your nephew is going. I'll be happy to show him around Boston. Blah blah blah. Uh-huh. She's a senior, kind of like your son, and she's like, I'm going to be doing remote learning, but the freshmen. My nephew is a freshman. He wants the college experience. He wants to, like, get his feet wet in it.
Yeah.
And I think that the incoming class, they've been cheated.
Yeah, they have.
So
it's,
much.
You know.
And he wants to go. I think it's nerves. I think it's like, I want to get my feet wet in this. So yeah. They're taking a chance, whereas the upperclassmen, like my neighbor's daughter and your son, are like,
been there, done that. Although my son hasn't done that yet. He's
right,
a late bloomer, but I mean.
Yeah, that's fine. That's totally fine.
I mean, the highlight of my freshman year at Northwestern was going to keggers at frat parties. I didn't belong to a frat. It was just like an all-male dormitory. You know, an old dormitory built like in, I don't know, 1900 or something. It's crazy. My highlight was going to keggers and going across Sheridan Road and deciding to do push-ups in the middle of the road, like at midnight or whatever, you know, that's like one of the main roads in Evanston, you know.
But see, those are the memories that you have as a college freshman. What about the incoming class this year? What is going? Everything's been so disrupted. What are they going to think about when they look back on this? It's going to be dominated by this virus,
I know.
It's horrible. And there is somebody that we can clearly point to that didn't do his job.
Yeah.
To mitigate this
with orange fucking hair and a spray tan to match, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a cat anus mouth, and it's like.
Jeez.
Well, in the midst of this conversation, a little less than an hour ago, Nitwit Nero picked up his phone and decided to tweet.
Oh,
and he's mad. He's mad.
He's mad.
Oh. Yeah.
All that adoration he got at the Clavern, meeting last night.
Adoration.
Well,
the triumph of the Will 4-Day Fest.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ, man.
No. So, I want
ambulance.
Get this. No, I want Big Ten and all other football back now. The Dems don't want football back for political reasons, but are trying to blame me and the Republicans. Another lie. But this is what we're up against. They should also open up all of their shutdown states.
Have you seen Biden's new ad that I sent you, Bob?
When did you send it, Sparky?
Just a little while ago on Gmail.
Okay, I've been looking at some other. So let me pull that up. He doesn't care who. He's a fucking psychopath.
Well, and to Rick's point, Bob, why are they opening the college campuses? It's the dollars. It's always the fucking dollars. You know how much revenue these campuses generate.
Steve. You're 100% correct, Steve. You've nailed it. That's exactly what it is. Exactly. And I'm telling you, my brother, the father of my niece, who's going back to the University of New Hampshire, he's fit to be tied. They want their money. They want everything. And they're forcing these kids into a dormitory situation. Mm. Four classes, in-person classes, and the other classes are remote. And she's uncomfortable with it, my niece.
Well,
it's not
with
right.
Community spread. I mean, we got kids going back to school, college. This thing's going to blow up again.
Sure, it is.
Yeah,
and when flu season comes, heaven help the mariner. Sparky just sent along the most recent Biden ad. It opens, it's called Let's Get Back in the Game. It opens with a shot, an overhead aerial view of an empty Michigan stadium. Maybe this is, Sparky, maybe this is what got him pissed off. But, you know, the humongous Michigan stadium, what is that?
That's what I was thinking about.
Yeah, 100,000 people, something like that. It's, you know, so let's check the audio out on this, see if it's, yeah.
We're going to be in the 60s. Enjoy the game. And now, to honor America, please join in the singing of our national anthem.
And then it cuts to other football stadiums. Empty.
All empty. Yeah.
Wisconsin Stadium, Camp Randall.
I hate the bad way.
An empty church. An empty beach. Trump put America on the sidelines. Let's get back in the game.
That's good. Have they had some help from the Lincoln Project on their advertising, Bob? I wonder.
This is all visual. I mean, there's as you can tell, there's no VO or anything, but they're powerful images.
Mm.
I hope America listens. But by the way, just because we need a giggle, and Agnes and I were thinking about this the other day, because the video itself is it's older. And what it is it's a bird named Ron, who is collecting sticks because he wants to mate. And we were talking about Jerry and Becky, and this immediately came to mind.
This is a nice stick. I like sticks. Pick.
Let me smash, please.
No, Ron. Go find Becky.
You want some fuck?
No, Ron. I don't want some fuck.
I got your blue. Hey, girl. You want some tail?
Ron, your tail is small.
What? Sweetie. You want yellow? She doesn't want yellow. Blue and yellow, no.
Ron, I'm leaving.
What? No, wait, let me smash. What's my life come to? Becky thought my tail was big. Becky used a let me smash, but Becky is smashing Ben. Ben is a hoe. Heck. Fuck this next. Fuck Ben. I need you, Becky. Becky, let me smash. I'ma get that bitch a stick. Bitches love sticks. Wrong stick.
Wrong stick, Becky, let me smash. If only the bird's name had been Jerry and not Ron, it would have been prophecy.
Oh, jeez.
Becky, let me smash.
Becky.
And by the way, Sparky points out that Governor Greg Abbott, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, maggot governor of Texas. The Patriots down in Texas has had about as much as they can stand. And so the bar owners on Saturday, led by Chris Polone, who owns the Rail Club Live in Fort Worth, they're going to defy Governor Greg Abbott's June 26 executive order that shut down bars. And so they're going. Polone says he expects to have 1,000 different bars participating, and they're calling it "Come and Take It," you know, Molon Lave, wash your melon, just like they say there in old Sparta. And so bar owners across Texas are going to open up because they're enraged. That Greg Abbott would let Jerry Jones go ahead and have him some NFL football, but they can't open their bars and get all liquored up and forget all and lose their inhibitions and start to LARPing and smollicking and lollygagging and grabulating and spraying and spewing and hooting and hollering and woo, yeah, party. They can't do that now because they ain't got no freedom in Texas. Jesus, fucking assholes! But
I mean, bars are like the very worst place to be for COVID. I mean, come on.
Except for a church, but you can't say that about the church.
Those are the worst. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, because here in Connecticut, Governor Lamont, you know, I view Connecticut as California's sister state on the East Coast, tiny sister state. But Governor Lamont has held off on phase three, which is the opening, reopening of bars. He's just like, there's just no way we're going to do that, because it's tight quarters, people are drinking, blah blah blah, and looking at what's happening in the other states.
Oh my God, we've got open bars here.
Oh God, you know,
in a tourist town.
And I'm sorry about that, Bob, because that's just bad. Because it's
well,
just
if the churches are going to be open, you might as well open the bars. I mean, the deacons are just going to go from the church to the bar anyway.
Well, that makes sense.
Our bowling alley has been here for over 50 years.
Hey, Bob.
It's shut down completely now. It went out of business.
Well, I don't know what's happening with Skype on my phone. I couldn't get in at all last week. I finally got in on my computer. Yes.
Tracy, love you. How you doing, dear?
I'm doing better. Thank you, Darlene. How are you, darling?
I'm doing all right, honey. I think about you all the time, and I'm glad to hear you're doing better. You keep rocking, sister. You keep rocking. Love you.
Hey, Sparky. What the hell happened on Yellowstone, dude? My God.
Did you watch it whole way?
Woo! Man, I sat there because I watched it. Usually, you know, I record it and then I watch it, you know, like the next day, so I don't have to watch the commercials. But motherfucker, God damn. I watched it, you know, live, and I'm like, oh my God.
That was a hell of a cliffhanger ending.
Man, and we gotta wait a motherfucking year to see what the fuck happened.
Yeah, see, you just
won't be in round till June again.
You just solved it for me. I'm waiting till the whole damn thing's over. Ain't nobody cliffhanger in my ass.
Oh my God. I mean, this shit, I'm just, my God. I sat there the whole time. At the end of it, I said, I can only imagine what Sparky was doing. I was like, this is, because they've never left it hanging like that. You know, usually
we were like, damn.
Exactly, because usually, however the season starts, whatever the situation is resolved, right? But this
And then they started this season with the what happened from last season.
Right. And I'm like, I was just like, I sat there. After the episode ended, I sat on my couch for a good 5-10 minutes with my mouth agape, like, did that just happen? I was just like.
But they have some good episodes and stuff. What do you think of the new characters?
Oh, Sister Girl? I mean,
Teeter,
and Teeter. I mean, do you know she's Michael Landon's daughter?
Yeah, I think I read that somewhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Teeter's Michael Landon's daughter. I was like, what the? I mean, Teeter, and I mean that in that episode with the horses and Teeter and the brother. I was like, oh my God! I mean, this season was off the chain. I was like, woo! I have to rewatch I'm going to rewatch this season just to rewatch this to see if I missed anything. But this, I'm telling you, this is like, they outdid themselves this whole season. And then when they brought back Old Boy, and I was just like, that episode, oh man, for anybody that hasn't watched Yellowstone, y'all, come on now.
Not until it is all the way done, Tracy.
Can I ask a quick, Tracy, is that an HBO program?
No, it's on Paramount, but the first two seasons is on Peacock.
Okay. Got it.
And,
okay.
And so I'm just wondering if they, when they're going to put season 3 on Peacock.
Well, I think you can probably catch up on season 3 episodes on the network.
I feel like such a nerd. Agnes and I started watching The Three Musketeers from the BBC the other night.
Ooh.
I probably could get Yellowstone on Apple TV, I'm assuming, because that's my thing. I just buy the episodes, right? I mean, I'm sure that they transferred over and
you can probably buy it by the season.
But you know what? You could might as well just get, well, you know, Darlene, you could get the full year of the Peacock for $50.
Okay.
It has the commercials, but you know what? I've noticed that when you watch, it's only like a couple of commercials, and then if you're consistently watching, if you're binging, after a while, it's like only like two interruptions. Because I went ahead and got the $50 for the whole year.
Oh, okay.
So Trace, is that like NBC's entry into online streaming?
Yes.
Peacock? Okay. Okay.
Yeah, they have some free stuff, but most of it you have to pay for.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In order to watch Yellowstone, you have to pay. But there's a lot of free stuff. But
episode's free.
Yeah, the first episode is free. But if you want to continue watching, you have to pay. And like I said, for $50 for a year, it's really not that bad.
So that first episode has to be really, really enticing to draw you in to buy.
It's probably the best one of all the seasons so far, right? The first episode, season one, episode one.
Well, I tell you,
you're hooked.
I'm suffering jealousy of another kind. I just got a note from Mike in Cascadia. Subject line, Green Mountain in the North Cascades. And 5 fantastic photographs. Sanity break today. Hike to the summit of Green Mountain in the North Cascades. This mountain in the Glacier Peak Wilderness area has an old lookout cabin on its summit. 100 years ago, there was a network of 4 lookouts on mountaintops to watch for fires. The likes of Gary Snyder, Philip Whalen, and Jack Kerouac manned fire lookouts in the North Cascades back in the day. Just a reminder, this land I hiked on today is federal public land, meaning this land is my land, your land, and our land. The GOP platform for the last couple of decades calls for the disposal of all 640 million acres of our federal public lands. Disposal means privatization. The oligarchs and plutocrats want that. I would guess most Americans do not want to lose access to these precious lands. Vote Democratic to keep it all ours. Amen, Mike. Amen. And, this is just another one of those little moments where the zeitgeist of the community does amazing things. I was, last night, I forget why, but I looked up Gary Snyder. And lo and behold, Gary Snyder, I think he's still in Utah, he was like writer in residence for years and years and years at Cal Davis and UC Davis, but he is 90 years old now and one of the last remaining members of the Beat Generation. And in Jack Kerouac's novel Dharma Bums, there's a passage where they spend time at the fire lookout cabin. Just looking off, watching for smoke on the horizon. And the Gary Snyder character is getting deeply into Zen, and he declares at one point, you can't fall off a mountain. And it's kind of a Zen koan. And the minute I opened it, and before I saw Gary Snyder's name mentioned by Mike in Cascadia, I'm looking at the photos, and I'm remembering last night looking up Gary Snyder. And then, bang, the likes of Gary Snyder, Philip Whalen, and Jack Kerouac. Damn, Mike. I mean, that's a hell of a narrow bit of wavelength to be tapping into. But it's just amazing. And again, I'm going to jump in here
for just a second because called away. But I just posted my morning's COVID isolation activity with my about to enter kindergarten grandson. So it ended up being 7 quarts of tomato juice.
Oh, my.
Ooh.
Oh, be still my heart. Ah, Roger, that looks, that's fantastic.
So anyhow, I might be back for the back porch a little bit later. I'm not going to log out, but the guy who put out a fire at our house almost 2 years ago while we were still inside it didn't know the house was on fire. Anyhow, he needs help moving a pool table, so my trailer is going to become a moving van for an hour or two, and I'll try
to get back, and
if there's anybody still here, I'll join back in on the back porch.
Well, hopefully he has somebody else to do the heaving, Roger.
Oh, I'm not lifting a goddamn thing. My back won't take it. I'm 75, so fuck
it. 10-4.
If he wants a pool table, he's going to have to do the moving. It's just my trailer's going to haul it. So, anyhow, have a good night, folks, and take care of yourselves. And this was just the first round of the tomatoes, so there'll probably be another run or two. I did another 4-5 quarts yesterday, 6 quarts yesterday of the yellow tomatoes, and this was 7 quarts of reds.
Man, so, yellow tomato juice? Oh, you're killing me. You're killing me.
Yeah, well, sorry about that. They just grow so well here. Anyhow, take care, folks. I got to go hook up the trailer.
All right.
Okay, see you.
Thanks, Roger. Thanks for sharing the picks.
Hey, Bob, those fire lookouts were all over the West Coast.
Yeah, up on the peaks.
Yeah. Since I remember going to one years and years ago back in the day. While they were still occupied, and the lady that was running the lookout, well, she come out and she just was happy to see somebody because they don't see anybody for days and days and days.
Since we were talking about colleges, UVM came back.
Hey, Jeremy.
I was downtown last night because I work downtown and driving around probably 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, and I probably saw 100, 200 students, no social distancing, no masks. So we're going to go from the safest state in the union right on the shitter here pretty quick, I think.
Oh, Jesus.
Well, but, yeah. But the good news is, and this is one of the first states I've seen doing this, and towns, is the same city that UVM is in. The police have all banded together, and they're cracking down on parties. And if you have a social gathering over, I don't know how many didn't read the article completely, they're giving out tickets of $100 for the first offense, and they said it can be exponentially higher as it goes. But being this town is full of frat houses, sorority houses, all they have to do is charge $25 a cup, and they're going to cover those charges.
Yeah, well, that's kind of the model that they were using in Hollywood until they got the authority to come in and shut off the utilities.
Power. At least, you know, because you guys, this week, Monday was the first day of classes for me at Cal State Northridge. And so I'm taking 5 classes. Only one of them is asynchronous. Oh. The other 4, I have 3 classes on Tuesdays and Thursdays from a 9:30 class, an 11 a.m. class, and a 12:30 class. And then 1 class on Monday and Wednesdays at 2 o'clock. So, and they're all Zoom classes. Wow.
That's ambitious, Tracy. That's a lot of classes.
Well, you know, it's good for me because it keeps me from, you know, getting stupid and dwelling, and because the best thing for me is to keep busy. And then I just got another good thing is I got an email today. They're opening the pools just for swim teams. So I'm going to start swimming again.
Yay! All right.
So I start on Monday morning, 6 a.m. So I'm going to do Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays. Well, I'm going to change it. I think we're going to do Monday, Wednesday, and Fridays at noon, and Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6 a.m.
That's incredible, Tracy. Good for you. And I think that the fact that you're doing the 5 classes and the swimming – that's industrious and good for you. You've got the time. Do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't have any, because it'll keep my mind off of the fact that I'm not working, you know? Yeah. And
you're accomplishing stuff, right?
I found out that they're going to, so apparently they've approved money again. So it's going to be $300 a week from the feds and $100 a week from the state. I think it's supposed to start back up on the 7th of September. I don't know if it's retroactive. Has anybody heard anything about that as to when it's starting or anything like that for unemployment? Anybody?
No.
Bueller?
No.
Bueller? No, Tracy.
Did the governor approve it?
Yes, he did. It just doesn't know when it just haven't heard as when it's going to start.
Now, I did see one story, Tracy. If this is based on Nitwit Nero's $300 and everybody and the states pitch in one, if that's what this is based on, I think it's good for about 3 weeks.
Right.
There was $167.
Stealing the money from FEMA.
Right.
So Tracy, you're saying you're only getting about $400 a month? A week?
Well, we're still getting the $167 a week, you know, and that's only until December.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, but then, and that was part of my breakdown last month as well. I mean, it was just the entirety of everything that I was going through last month was, you know, the uncertainty of whether or not I was going back to work, our financial situation, and just the whole thing was happening in this country. And I finally just broke. I just couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, I know. I mean, but you know, I mean, right now with in Connecticut, I think ours is like 198 state, and then everything above that, like mine is like 629, but I chose to have the taxes, state and federal, taken out of it. But California is far, you know, Connecticut is expensive, but we're not California expensive. You should be from my perspective, you ought to be getting a hell of a lot more.
See, Darlene, that's the thing. Like these asshole barkeeps in Texas. Yeah, I understand. Your bar is shut down. You can't make any money. That's your chosen living. And you know, there's no value judgment, no moral judgment. I'm the last person in the world to do that. But the poor damn things have been so poisoned by right-wing ideology for so goddamn long that they cannot see the obvious solution.
Right.
And the obvious solution is, you know, the same thing that saved their great-grandparents during the Depression.
Exactly.
And that is, the government pours money into the economy. You know, if that bar owner can even get a couple or three, you know, $3,000 a month. We are not going to break our country on $3,000 a month for every citizen.
Exactly.
We can't break our country on that because we remain a sovereign nation with a sovereign currency that is, in fact, the benchmark currency of the entire world.
Yep.
And so, I gotta.
We haven't broken our country by giving trillions to Kushner and Mnuchin.
Bingo, precisely. I mean, I got a story here. Poor little Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, got a big sad the other day. And he said that he was worried that if the Democrats get a stimulus through, that it will soften the amount of suffering of the American people. That miserable little shithead actually said that. If you give people money and you make it less painful to be in a recession, we can stay in a recession longer. The recession is created by the government. The government shut the economy. So all of these governors, Democrat and Republican, will not have an incentive to open the economy if you soften the amount of suffering that they have created. You evil little fucker! Dirty, rotten little bastard who learned nothing from your neighbor.
Hey, Bob, did you see where he got, supposedly says he got attacked last night after he left the
Yeah, he got, people said ugly things to him, and he had a sad, and and suddenly he, and suddenly, you know, he's Jacob Blake.
Yeah, right.
What we need to be doing is every day broadcasting that your governors are causing the unemployment. No, the goddamn disease is causing the unemployment. But he's never going to miss an opportunity to put forward some godforsaken libertarian talking point. I mean, if you're a Kentuckian, if you're a Kentuckian, what the fuck is wrong with you that you let this guy be your senator when he would let you hang fire for some twisted political philosophy? Honest to Jesus.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Can I ask a question? Do you what? Okay. Because I want to soothe over my disappointment ahead of time. Do you think that Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham are going to get kicked out of the Senate, voted out of the Senate? What is your prediction on that, or do you not want to make a prediction?
No. There's too many variables. Can I cheat a little bit, Darlene?
Yeah, go ahead. Be my guest.
If people get to vote,
exactly.
If the vote is not irretrievably monkeyed up,
yep,
to use the words of Ron Monkey Up DeClantis,
yep,
then I'd say there's a decent likelihood that Mitch and and Lindsey are gone.
Well, see, this is what scares me, because even if, like, Mitch winds up getting reelected and is minority leader, even though we all know who's going to be majority leader.
And Mitch will own him like a...
You got it. You got it, brother, because I'm like, no, what we've been through is unacceptable. It's unacceptable.
It absolutely is. But what I want to know is, I know Appalachia fairly intimately, Darlene. And these are people whose families were saved from starvation and death by FDR. And for a long time, that legacy stayed. But somewhere along the way, it's like Bruce used to say, I referenced him a couple of nights ago, they got a little money in their pocket and they thought that made them Republicans.
But, you know, also, Bob, I mean, generational memory. I mean, it's like, is there some sort of memory in there,
well, there
in Appalachia about FDR? My guess is probs not.
Well, I mean, I'm one generation.
You know, it's been many years.
My parents were Depression children, so it's fresh with me.
Okay.
And so I've done everything in my power to pass that knowledge down, and so has Agnes, to our children.
You're most unique, though. You're unique. You're a rare breed within in the South.
Well, I mean, I'm early generation X or late boomer. I prefer early X.
That's me. Yeah, yeah. Because I was born 65, so like
you're definitely
X.
You're definitely X.
Yeah, and you know, we're dangerous. Gen Xers are dangerous because we take a little bit of the millennial stuff and some of the boomer stuff, and we're sort of a dark horse. And I'm proud of our generation. I really am, because we didn't grow up with the computers and all that stuff, but we learned it. We embraced it. We figured it out on our own.
And you didn't necessarily have June and Ward at home.
Exactly.
You know, the origins of latchkey kids are in Generation X.
Yep. Yes. Exactly.
We walked home from school by ourselves.
You got it. Yeah, Tracy.
Meeting up with single parent families. Yeah. You know.
Right, and we were not. We weren't helicopter parented.
No, we weren't.
No, we weren't. And Tracy you being an African American woman, you're even more of a warrior within the Gen Xer group than we are, than me and Bob.
Yeah,
are
fucking right. I am.
You're right.
Yeah, we my kids look at me funny when I say I used to pump, $20 worth of quarters through a video game machine. Well, why?
Fuck yeah.
Why? Yep. I mean, can't you just play them?
I found a story. California is about to send out 300,000 $1,000 weekly unemployment bonus payments, and it'll include payments going back to August 1st. And this is from 7 hours ago.
Oh, that'll be helpful.
That's awesome. Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear that.
Hey, I hate to do this, but we only got 20 minutes left in the program, and I was hoping we would wipe out the week, but it doesn't look like we're going to. But if we could meet and you know, Steve and Miss Karen and little Twiggy and little Cletus knocked out $10 of Giraffe's challenge and Joey's, we got $40 to go on that. That takes
I'll
us.
I'll do that, Bob. This is Darlene. I'll cover the 40.
Bless your heart, Darlene. Thank you. I wasn't leaning on you in particular or anyone in particular.
I know, but I usually, you know me, there's a certain amount that I contribute every month between the subscription and my contributions.
Yeah.
Again, my business was hit by COVID.
I worry. Partial
unemployment. Partial. So I do what I can, but I feel very comfortable with the 40. So thank you. I'll do that.
Okay. So that's met. That means that what we got left remaining is $235 to finish August. And if we do that, then we got fundraising free radio on Monday. Because Dave knocked out half of Monday. So,
well, Bob, this is Darlene again. I usually do, I'll do another 60. I'll do $60 as a challenge. Ah. So I'll do 100 total, 40 meaning the previous challenge, and an extra 60. So if somebody can chip in the 60, I'll match it.
That would be awesome. Let me do some math in my head. That would leave us at 115 for Monday. So that would be huge.
Awesome.
Thank you, Darlene. You. I can't thank you enough.
I know you're. Don't worry about it. Thank you.
It just seems like. Well, I mean, we do have added expenses right now because I'm paying for two separate internet connections that I can't get rid of one of them until the contract is up, or else I hate that contract bullshit.
We got it, and we need you. We need you. This is so important. We need the horn in the worst way. So
as weird as this week has been, Darlene. I feel like if I hadn't had this community to come to, I would have been barking goddamn mad after night one of the Cool Kids conclave.
I agree, because what they did, the Cool Kids conclave, was a bunch of bullshit. It was just bullshit. It was fear-mongering. They ran home to mama. And, you know, please, somebody that's been listening to the horn and hasn't contributed, you know, chip in towards the 60. You know, you're listening for a reason, and help out. Just chip in a little bit. I know it's tough, but we need the horn. It's so important. It's vital.
And you know, Darlene, there's another aspect to this. You know, nothing here is for sale. We don't charge anybody anything. It's strictly a goodwill operation. But you have to remember, and this is kind of like missionary work. If you've ever been a Baptist or anything like that, anybody who wants to can listen to this program for free. But I can tell you for certain that there are some little right wing shitbirds who hang on every word of this program, and of course, they're a bunch of shit eating freeloaders.
Absolutely.
So, like I said, it's kind of like missionary work because they hate our guts. I get the mail. They hate our guts. And yet they listen more than some regular members of this community. They can't help themselves. They're drawn to this like iron filings to a magnet.
Yeah.
We might change one of their little maggot minds someday. The odds are right up there with infinite monkeys with infinite typewriters and one of them cranking out Hamlet, but the odds are there.
Exactly. I mean,
would it be fair to call them welfare queens, Bob?
They absolutely got it. They're welfare maggots.
Hey, can I jump in with the programming note real quick?
Absolutely, Chris.
I saw some previews, and it was real quick. It was like one of those 20-second spots for a new Fargo coming out. Okay, not the movie, but the show.
Is that the one with Chris Rock?
Yes, it looks like it was all African-American-centric, Tracy. It looks like it's going to be... I don't know if it's based in Harlem.
It was supposed to come out earlier this year, So it's, when is it coming out, Chris?
I missed the date on it, but
yeah, it was supposed to premiere. Actually, it was supposed to premiere in March or April of this year.
I think it's in September. I was watching FX last night. I was watching the movie Hidden Figures last night instead of the convention.
Oh yeah, that's a great movie.
Much good better call. Choice.
Good, yeah, good call on your part, Sparky.
Well, I've been catching up on movies through that period all week. I watched the pregame and then I watched the aftermath on MSNBC. I figured they'd give me the rundown on what happened. Then I found these two guys on the internet the other night that were funnier now.
And then I just wanted to say a little known fact about Wilbur Ross. He used to babysit for Methuselah.
Nice. Well played.
And then, has anyone been watching Space Force at all?
Oh, Agnes loves Space Force.
It's pretty fucking funny. I'm only on episode 3, or no, 4. I've watched 3.
Yes.
But, it's pretty fucking
I watched funny. A couple of episodes, too. Steve Carell.
He's the best, man. He's the best. You don't get a
lot better. Now, of course, I have to do my plug for Lovecraft Country, you know.
Yeah, I want to watch that. It's in the queue, Tracy, definitely. I want to watch that. I want to get on that.
Just the fact... Like I said, the first episode, they had James Baldwin's speech on being a Negro in America. And then last week's episode, they had Gil Scott-Heron doing Whitey on the Moon. And now I can't wait to see who they have this week's on this week's episode.
Yeah, I want to definitely get on that. And then is Billable still there?
He's on mute.
Oh, hey, Billable, I got a question for you, Evanston-wise. Can you go off of mute?
He might be gone. I mean, he might be doing something.
I think he had to do a phone call.
Oh, he's on the call with the boss? Okay, I'll save that
or
for
a client or something.
Yeah, I got a couple of questions, Evanston-wise, if he was a Wildcat.
Yeah, send it to the back porch.
There you go. That's all I got.
Well, I think Chris. I think Billable went to Northwestern back when the Illinois road signs said Illinois 55, and then some smart ass would paint Northwestern nothing.
Oh yeah. Before Pat Fitzgerald, and I remember when they beat my Irish, and it was like holy shit! It was like they ended a streak of I don't know how many games.
You know, I'm trying to think how far back it was. It might have been like 2006 or something. But I remember watching when they went to the Rose Bowl, and it was the ultimate. It was the ultimate existential, absurdist football game because Northwestern had a quarterback named Kafka.
Oh yeah, right.
I have a programming note.
I have another programming note, and it has nothing. It's nothing new. But for those of you who decide to get the Peacock channel, I have been watching, they have Columbo and the Rockford Files.
Oh, no, okay, I got it. I'm getting it. Just shut up, that's enough. Yeah, fuck it.
I have one as well. On Amazon Prime, I noticed that a 6-part series, each one's about 2 hours, it's on Napoleon and his life. It's actually been pretty interesting.
Yeah, cool.
And also, I don't know, I know for those, if you have a library card, I don't know if it's across the country, but in LA for LA Public Library, it's if you sign up and go to the e-media, there's a thing called Canopy with a K, and they have and it's for free. You get to pick 9 movies a month, and they have some of the most amazing. It's like 9,000 movies. And there's one that I'm going to start. There's a couple that I'm going to be watching. One about Ida B. Wells. Another something about Sonia Sanchez, James Baldwin. I mean, it's just amazing. So check it out. And all of it is free if you have a library card. So sign on to your local library's website and check it out and see if you guys can access it.
Ooh, ooh. I wonder if our library system here would do that. That's wild.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's Canopy with a K.
I got good news. Matt in San Francisco and Brendan have knocked down Darlene's challenge, which leaves us at 115. Leaves us at 115 to go. And Robert in Australia said, "This is a separate $100 challenge. The car service didn't cost as much as expected, so I have some cash to spare. Mind you, the exchange rate sucks. I watched Lovecraft Country episode one last night. Excellent. Highly recommended." So there's two thumbs up, down, under, if you can sort out the physics of that. So thank you, Robert. We got a $100 challenge on the table, and that'll wipe out August. And that will be freaking awesome. Thank you. And then I got this note from Matt in San Francisco. Subject line: "I am so furious I can barely see straight." As you know, and just a reminder, Matt was beside himself earlier this week because he had to lay people off. As you know, and it deeply upset him, as you know, I've had a hell of a week. Due to the COVID-19 pandemic non-response of this administration, the company I work for initiated another layoff. Not one that was planned, as they did one in February. This one was due to the slowdown. I can tell you this one hurt. Every business unit lost a number of full-time folks, some that have been there for more than a decade. Those people are in shock. For the last few months, they've suited up every day and put themselves at risk because they're professionals. Their reward, a layoff. I've had calls from people in tears. I've had calls from those still employed with questions on how are we going to get all this work done with not enough people to do it. I have customers calling because the service level of the online part of the business took a hit. So we're doing the job of three or four people while putting ourselves at risk, mourning the exit of our coworkers, every day more stressful than the last, all with the looming uncertainty of what is ahead. To see these fuckers at the RNC, to hear those motherfucking speeches, to hear the callous words of the Rand Paul wingnut wing, I just don't understand how people cannot grasp how much suffering people are going through right now. I understand how people are losing their shit. I understand how the step to violence is bubbling right under the surface. I get it. What I don't get is why it is this way. It doesn't have to be this way. This is all so fucking unnecessary. I'm tired of the stress, the sleepless nights, the endless days, the workload that's unachievable. Something has got to give. We cannot endure this ridiculousness much longer. Fuck the RNC, fuck Trump, and fuck all his spawn. Matt, that is so earnestly and appropriately put. The worst part of all this is not a goddamn bit of this had to be this way. Monday will see the end of the last full month of summer. And we're going into a fall that stands every likelihood, no matter how much data they hide, no matter how much they fudge the numbers. The agony, the misery is going to only continue to mount. And when Matt says something's got to give, we can't endure this ridiculousness much longer, we got to understand that this is by, as we say so often, this is a choice that was made. This is a choice that these godforsaken maggots have made to immiserate the entire nation of the United States of America. And to expect us to accept some sort of CAGA bullshit as an appropriate exchange for our suffering, our illness, our misery, our agony, our death. And, you know, something's got to give. Well, they're counting on it. Every goddamn day, Donald Trump tries to take another step toward inciting full-scale rebellion and insurrection. He needles the left, trying to get another, trying to get the energy going to drive people into the streets. The cops turn a blind eye to murderers and fascist bully boys. And we've got to get from here to November 3rd. And we got to hang on. We got to hang on by whatever we got to hang on with. And we've got to cling not to our guns and Bibles, but to our own essential decency. And we got it. We got to get to November, and we got to get him out of there. I don't know what it's going to be like if I open this broadcast on November 4th and that stupid bastard is claiming re-election. I can't even think about it. Can you? Can you even ponder that? It's intolerable. It can't happen. It cannot be permitted to happen because we're done. If it does. It's like I said, I saw a commenter saying, name one thing that Donald Trump has ever done to you liberals. Hurt feelings don't count. You sociopathic prick. To not be able to tell the difference between moral outrage and hurt feelings. Jesus, jumping Christ. Sorry, but, Matt often sends along delightful emails, observations of time and place, and where he and his husband are, and how they're dealing with the virus. I don't recall in recent memory seeing a note come from Matt with that much pain in it. And I know how decent Matt is, and for him to be pushed to that point. To feel that agony, shit, it agonizes me. And we're all in this together. We are all in this together. So thanks for the note, Matt. Know that you have the heart and soul of the Horn Family Community Congregation gathering you in such light as we generate. And that We're alongside you, rooting for you every step of the way. But I know that feeling. Something's got to give. Something's got to give. And thank you to Herbert. Herbert just jumped in, and we are $40 from done. That's $60 of Robert's up over down under two thumbs up down under challenge. Thank you, Herbert. Sorry, I didn't mean to just go on that tear like that. I apologize, y'all, but it just sometimes shit just gets all over you. You know what I mean? Y'all still there?
Yes. Ah. We put everybody put ourselves on mute so we can make sure nobody interrupted you.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that. But
Harry Reid had John Dean on just now.
Oh, yeah?
Great, great segment. I have to look for it on YouTube.
Excellent. Well, y'all, I appreciate it. We've just about made it. We'll have a fundraising free Monday, and I thank everybody for your input this evening. Once again, a fantastic Friday on the front porch. Awfully nice to see Jeremy pop by. Tracy, I'm glad you managed to make it work again. Thank you.
Yeah,
we'll get after it more in Monday. And I got a feeling we're going to have plenty of more ends. God, we've got a surfeit of them, don't we? So thanks, everybody. Thanks for joining in the conversation. Thanks for your emails. Thanks for your messages, your texts. And yes, you're absolutely right, Eileen in New York. An asshole is an asshole is an asshole, be they from Massachusetts, New York, or Connecticut. No arguing with that. Oh, and by the way, Jeremy, before I go, just one little thing. You do realize Nitwit Nero had himself a super spreader event this evening, right? In New Hampshire.
No, I didn't hear that.
Yeah, in New Hampshire. And
I did post that they posted a video, I think, last night, you know, showing if Joe Biden's elected, this will be your city burning. It was fucking Barcelona.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's just beautiful.
Yeah.
So.
No, but I didn't know he was in New Hampshire, so I'll stay
yeah,
here
for the foreseeable
future.
Yeah, he was in New Hampshire this afternoon, and before the Klan rally started, they said, per Executive Order 63, please wear your masks, and the maggots booed.
You know, it's funny.
Was it a ramp rally?
No, this is inside some sort of a building. No social.
I go to these.
No social distancing.
Go ahead, Mom. Sorry.
It was in Manchester, Manchester, Jeremy, and no social distancing, and they didn't want to wear no mask.
That's funny.
I
saw White House post that they weren't going to do out inside events anymore.
Well, I see walls.
Nope.
And here in Connecticut, guys, we've got West Nile virus to worry about now with the mosquitoes here in late August. So, yeah, it's fun times, USA.
Oh, isn't that just lovely?
Yeah, I go to the same grocery store every week, and there's at least one person in there. Everyone else wears a mask, but one person that isn't. In the last 2 weeks, it's been a Karen-looking motherfucker who I don't dare say a word to because you know she'll flip out. And then to highlight that, last night I was in a store, maybe it was Wednesday, and there's a girl in front of me, college kid, probably UVM, St. Mike's, one of the major colleges, and the cashier said, wow, you're all scratched up. She's like, yeah, I'm allergic to the sun. When it comes out, I get itchy and I get scratchy. She wasn't wearing a mask. So I wanted to say you love the ventilator and then use that, but I kept my mouth shut there too.
Jesus. Well, you know, as usual, avoid them like the plague because they are. Hey, the Malloy's on his way at 9 with a fresh and hot. And the back porch will continue after the front porch closes. Again, thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thank you to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time on this planet by participating in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. For God's sakes, please stay safe. Stay home if you can. If you can't stay home, observe all the necessary and proper measures and precautions. Wear your mask. Wear gloves if you can. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Maintain social distancing. And if some idiot comes towards you prattling about he doesn't want people to not suffer, avoid that bastard like the plague, because he is. Later, y'all. Have a great weekend.